This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and very welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Once again, we're here in UCD, a very special show. We're recording live from the village in UCD this year. It's AgSoc Week all week. And the students that are here joining us are very happy to be here. So from trad sessions to wax auctions, the students have been busy all week raising funds, particularly for two very good charities, MS Ireland and Tiggy's Trust. Thanks to Kira from AgSoc for helping us out and, I suppose, setting up this particular live recording here in UCD. AgSoc, indeed, are celebrating 100 years. That deserves another shout out, surely. Thanks also to our own Breed Walsh from IFJ for helping us set this up. Breed, the pressure got to Breed. She couldn't be here with us today, but she's there. I'm sure she's listening. Grassland Agro for staying with us in terms of helping us make Farm Tech Talk happen each week. And of course, our resident backroom team from Traction, including the Wexford Yellowbelly John Tobin, Kevin and Kieran. A game of two halves today. Today, we're going to first join by my regular panels, Adam, Darren, Aidan and Siobhan. We're going to talk all things farming. John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro was supposed to be here with us, but again, he got the heebie-jeebies last night, so he couldn't be here with us today. In the second half, I'll be joined by our very own Galway's best, Amy Ford, camogie legend in her own field. We'll dig deeper into her past shortly. Niamh Gunn, our intrepid Cavan reporter, who allegedly spent most of her work experience lying in the straw on Tullamore Farm when she was working with the Farmers' Journal. And Robert Caroon, a relatively new recruit in the Farmers' Journal from Athboy, County Meath, working in the marketing department. We'll also be joined by Kira Byers, proud AgSoc lady and auditor from Ballyjames Duff, County Cavan. Okay, we want your participation in the second half of the show. We'll hear from some of the students that are with us here today as normal. To start, I have quick fire questions for our panel. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, Alice asks, quick fire, ask Adam, can I mix bulls between pens on slats? I have to move something because I've sold some and only have a few left in one pen. Talk to me, Adam.
Yeah, it's always dicey, Jack. I suppose in terms of mixing bulls at that stage,
I suppose if you're very stuck, you hear some people maybe putting, and you laugh at this, but maybe aftershave or Jay's fluid across the bull's back to try and take away the smell from the bull. But really, I've seen legs broke. I've seen, you know, bulls blowing up in terms of hanging across gates or whatever. I wouldn't go there. No mixing. If you can at all, no mixing there.
Okay, nice one, Darren. There's a relatively long one in on the email here for you from Peter. Jack, I'm here in the sheep shed. So emailed it into farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie. Jack, I'm here in the sheep shed. It's 1:34 a.m. Cows are calving the other side of the wall. I'm after coming off an early shift in a local factory. The country is full of people like me who absolutely love the breeding game. I've probably got 2 hours a night sleep for the last week, but who cares? The problem is, Jack, the next generation won't do it. By the way, Jack, Adam, Darren, I'm lying in a lambing pen writing this, trying to get lambs to suck. But I give them the best chance to survive. Us farmers are not giving us the same chance. I know you probably won't read this out, but those are my thoughts at 1:49 a.m. Have to be up at 4 a.m. to check again, and again at 7 a.m. to leave the young lad to work. All to survive, but we love it. By the way, absolutely love the Farm Tech Talk show. Gives me life. Darren, it's a comment, but there's no real question in there, but there's a lot of people putting hard work in at this time of the year, calving, lambing, the whole lot.
There is, and I suppose, look, at that's we've seen protests this week around price and around where the future of the industry is going. And it's something we often think of. I'm sure if you ask Aidan or Adam, say when they're in the midst of calving, sometimes they question it. Siobhan can sit on a combine, it's not as strenuous.
Correct.
But
yeah,
when you are looking at that, you sometimes question, and no different than I suppose when we get under pressure. And there's a lot of things happening at the moment. Input costs are at a very high level. Market prices have improved, but they've just been eroded. And you would hope that things get back to some bit of normality over the next, say, 12 months, we can get more sheep meat going into China. Sorry, New Zealand gets back into China with higher quantities of sheep meat, and it brings back a bit of balance.
Okay.
And we see input costs reduced down.
Okay.
But
okay.
Take the point on
that. I mean, the breeding and lamb. It's a difficult time of the week. It's only a couple of weeks. What do you do after that then? Not much. Yeah. Deirdre says to ask Aidan. Ask Aidan, grass is scarce. I'm here in East Clare with the calved cows out by day. I've about 30% of the farm grazed already. Middle of February. What's my target for the end of February? I reckon I'm getting ahead of myself. Aidan, is she getting ahead of herself?
Yeah, she probably is, Jack. Like, the target for February is usually 30% of the farm to be grazed. Now, you can go a little bit above that and it's okay, but I definitely wouldn't go any further than 40%. Otherwise, you're just going to, you know, you won't have enough grass to get through March.
Yeah, right.
Until the 5th or 6th of April, whenever she wants to start her second round. So okay, definitely I would say slow down. Go to 40%, but don't go any more than that. And the fact that she's only out by day and still has 30% graze,
yeah,
you know, means that she definitely doesn't have that much grass if she's that far ahead.
Okay. Alexa asks Siobhan, why is Siobhan so anti-dairy farming? Because really, all tillage farmers are is want to be diesel heads. Now, Darren didn't write this, like, want to be diesel heads who have too much land and they spend their days driving around to farms from here, there and everywhere. Siobhan. Why is Siobhan so anti-dairy farming? What's going on there?
Not anti-dairy, Jack.
Are you not?
We need all sectors.
No, this is Alexa. This isn't me. This isn't me.
At the minute, Alexa, I'm anti-policy, which is making the dairy farmers
Just explain what that's about. Like, you were saying, there's a drain of land away from the tillage sector, you think, at the moment. Like,
So I suppose the nitrates banding rules that Aidan isn't very fond of either, I'd say, is causing farmers to look for more land so that they can maintain their cow numbers. And as a result, there's huge demand for land, and I suppose dairy farmers are in a better position to pay for it, and that's resulting in tillage farmers losing out on land and ultimately the area tillage being reduced. And you know, we have a climate action plan target to increase the tillage area, because tillage is good for the environment. It has low greenhouse gas emissions, it has 4 times less than beef, 8 times less than dairy, and we're not going to meet that target if the policy continues to contradict the climate action plan.
Yeah, and the minister is very strong on trying to get more tillage, trying to get more grain.
Well, he talks strong on it, Jack, but the policy isn't the same.
Has he not put some incentives in place, Siobhan, to try and help that and stimulate, you know, a little bit more grain growing?
Yeah, there's incentives there. The protein aid is the biggest incentive, and that is a really good payment this year. People are probably going to get paid more than €500 per hectare for that. The straw scheme has put a floor in the market. I wouldn't say it's an incentive. It's not money gained. It's money that they had. It really doesn't matter what he's done on those to a certain extent at the minute, because the other policy is taking it out of production.
Okay. Excellent. Right, back to you in a minute, Siobhan. Adam, come to you, I suppose. Like, you didn't go to the French match, did you? No.
No. Couldn't get tickets, Jai.
Could you not?
No.
Jeez, I thought you fancied yourself as a bit of a kind of a Graham Rowntree, like, you know, that you'd be able to kind of...
Are you not
training the rugby team in Cavan? No.
No. Yeah, under 12s right. They don't have good contacts. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, moving swiftly along. Yeah. So tell me, beef rice good this week again?
Yeah, another solid week, Jack. Yeah. I suppose a bit of games being played there around, you know, maybe talking about pulling next week and some factories, you know, talking strong about that. But that's just trying to flush out supplies. Look, supplies are very, very tight. It's been a dream start, to be honest, to 2023. And I can't see anything changing in the next, at least until June, I'd say.
Honest to God, like that long. Like, it's not often you can see in a commodity market, you know, that you can see a visibility for kind of 4 or 5 months ahead.
Yeah,
like,
look, and it goes back to supply and demand, Jack. It's really in terms of 5-6% reduction in supplies forecast up to the end of May or the end of June, and that's going to really help us in terms of where we're going. And that's what it is all about in terms of the beef trade. It's supply and demand. If we have solid demand and we have low supply, price will go up.
And when you say supply, are we talking about just Irish supply or kind of global supply?
It's Irish supply, but also in the UK, yeah. Numbers are tight. I was speaking to a Scottish farmer last week who's getting, you know, equivalent of 6-10 a kilo for Angus heifers and Angus bullocks. Mm. And across Europe, you know, it's tight as well. Consumption's under pressure, but supplies are tight. And then if we go even further afield, you know, you look at China. We spoke about China. Darren has talked about China, but in terms of China, you know, 675,000 extra ton of beef required in that country for 2023. And it's the knock-on implications of Brazil and South America focusing then on that market. That takes off pressure across Central Europe and it allows us maintain those high-priced markets across Europe.
Are many of your guys buying suck calves now, Adam, you know, and rearing them, we'll say, on farms? Or what's the lie of the land for this year? Like, obviously, it's a bit early yet. Like,
yeah, we've seen a bit of a move towards that, Jack. We've seen a bit of a move where suckler farmers are sort of welding on that little bit of an enterprise onto their farms in terms of rearing maybe 10, 20, 25 calves. I suppose calf price would have started off strong. Maybe I'd say it's we correcting there in the last couple of days, maybe in terms of even coming back a wee bit. Mm. And look at it, we know from the Thrive project, we need calf price to be, you know, 150 there probably for heifers is maximum we can pay, and probably 180 is maximum for bulls to be able to come out with that margin of 200 ahead. But yeah, look, we're seeing more and more of that. You know, it's a complete shift. You know, 60% of our beef now comes to the dairy herd. 10 years ago, that was 40%. So, and we're going to see more of that because suckler cow numbers are tracking down, dairy cow numbers are going up, exports are going to come under pressure. So we're going to see more beef coming.
Is there going to be a market for that type of beef, Adam? Do you feel like, you know, I mean, it's Angus, it's Herefords, it's that out of dairy cows. We'll talk to Aidan about it in a minute, you know, but is there a market for it?
Sure, look, Jack, it's not been differentiated at the moment in the market. So there's nothing, it's quality beef, you know, it's quality assured, it's Angus, it's Herefords coming from the dairy herd. I suppose the profitability of that from a farmer point of view, I'd have reservations there as regards calf quality. We are making progress. We're not making enough progress, I suppose, in terms of using better bulls on dairy cows to make sure that we've a sufficient carcass weight at the end of it all. You know, there's no money unless you're getting a very high beef price and finishing a 230 kilo carcass versus a 330 or a 350 kilo carcass from a suckler cow.
Back to you in a minute. Darren, in terms of, I suppose, the quick fire that came in from that farmer, like is the lambing maybe, is it in full swing now, like for the main crop, like, or is that guy still an early lamber?
Yeah, I'd say he's probably still an early lamber, given that we've seen an extension of the lambing season over the last few years. Yeah. Historically, you would have had December, January, and you would have had a break then, and you would have had a big push sort in February, March. Okay. Now you have a small cohort in, say, December, January, pedigree flocks, small cohort now, and the majority then is March, April.
Okay. March, April. So here we are now, the middle of February. So we've, like, there's another couple of weeks before we're into the real thick of it, like, you know. Yeah.
You're probably 2 weeks off, sort of, I'd say, from the 1st of March onwards. And then historically, your mid-season historic, say, lamber would have always had St. Patrick's Day as your line in the diary or your date that you wanted to go on there. And I'd say that's probably a lot of, say, flocks. And some flocks have pushed back further this year to be closer to grass, to try and insulate themselves from the high fertilizer prices. And that will be an element this year too.
All you do anyway is leave the sheep out all year round, like, you know what I mean, and move them from one field to the next, one bare field to the next, like, you know. Honest to God, like, geez, you couldn't keep grass into
small,
the
small cohort, Jack.
Is that all? Is that all?
And that became after when dairy farmers got very greedy. I wouldn't give the sheep farmer a bit of grass anymore.
Aidan, I'll let you come back in a minute, Aidan. I'll let you come back in a minute. Like, you know, they're all at you today. Like, Darren, this week, of course, we have the CAP magazine, like, big So Free with the Farmers Journal this week, there's a special CAP magazine, a 40-pager, I suppose, summarising the CAP reform changes that are happening now on farms. Darren, farmers, including the students, including everyone that's involved in farming, they're really only getting up to tune now in terms of what actually CAP means and what changes are happening, starting the 1st of January 2023 for the next 5 years.
Yep, and even some of the meetings we went to, and you'll be walking out after, and the farmer will come up and say, well, I changed nothing for 10 years. I think that no change.
Yeah.
I'm still grand, haven't I?
Yeah.
Like, the message in this is every system, every farmer does change. Now, there is no farmer that will have the same single farm payment this year than what they had in the past.
Yeah.
And that's, they mightn't have changed anything, but the system, as Siobhan said, policy has changed. Your entitlements, that was, if we had an entitlement worth €300 before, that was pretty much, it went up or down a small bit because of convergence. Now you have eco schemes taking a quarter of that, your front loading or Chris taking 10%, and depends on what you do, depends on what you get back. And then high value entitlements, of course, are going to continue to be subject to convergence. But that's only one tiny element, and we could spend 20 minutes talking about that. Yeah. But because we have a new CAP, we have a new suckler scheme, we have two, say, existing tilly schemes that are rolling over, maybe with different conditions. Mm. We'll have a new dairy calf to beef scheme. We had acres. We have a new, say, TAMS or on-farm capital investment scheme. The sheep scheme open. That brings new conditions that farmers are only coming up to speed with. So literally the whole, say, what I'd say the paperwork side of farm has all just been totally transformed.
And Darren, what's the best piece of advice you could get? So obviously there's 40 pages of all that CAP ingredients that have happened for the last kind of couple of weeks and months coming together, even years, like, you know, this has been in the making. Now it comes together in that 40 pager. So your advice is to get that magazine. It's in the journal this week. But in terms of taking it to the next step then, what's the next piece of advice you'd like to give kind of farm families?
But see, there's so much that you can do by planning early. So even if you take the suckler scheme, if you're not in the quality assurance, you need to be acting on that now because that's a requirement to get in. If you're looking at, say, leasing of entitlements, you want to be looking at a space for nature. Do you need to lease out your entitlements? Because under the new CAP, a big change is that scrub that would have been excluded from payments last time out is now going to be brought in. So you could have farmers there that maybe are leasing out one, two, three entitlements. Mm. They might have that land now that they can use it on themselves. Mm. Or then one of the big aspects that will affect in particular Siobhan and Derry, Siobhan and Aidan, is along the lines of what happens with the leasing of entitlements.
Okay.
Because if I'm leasing entitlements of Adam and I say I'm giving him 9,000 every year, and he's giving it back to, say, I'm
the check
back
is coming in.
Exactly.
It's not 9,000 anymore this year. Like.
So who makes up the differential?
Yeah,
and that's a big one.
Yeah.
And to me, it goes back to understanding and planning early, because advisors are going to be up to their eyes. Like, there's going to be space for nature, checking maps to see whether scrub is right, whether hedgerow. There's going to be explaining the new schemes. You're going to have a big rush, I think, when their new TAMS open of applications coming into that. Mm. And advisors are still dealing with, I suppose, a carryover of, say, questions around acres, around organics. So it will be intense up to the 15th of May.
Okay, thanks for that, Darren. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, milk prices coming down.
Yeah, Jack.
Probably no harm. You were beginning to lose the run of yourselves a little bit. Like, were you like,
with the costs of production?
Cost me granny. Like, you know what I mean? For God's sake. Like,
No, look, it has come down, and we expect more co-ops in the next while to announce a reduction in milk price. In fairness, it was fairly well flagged, but not probably to the level that it has fallen by. Like, 6 centiliters is a huge drop. We've never seen that before. Albeit from a high base, as you say, we acknowledge that. I suppose the good news, Jack, is that commodity prices in New Zealand and in Europe are on the way up again. So we're kind of going through this funny phase where prices are falling in Ireland, but actually, you know, global commodity prices, which milk prices lag. So hopefully, look, by the time we hit peak production, we should see the Irish prices kind of stabilising at least.
Yeah. You know, busy time, like Darren, busy time on dairy farms at the moment?
Yeah, very busy. These few days are the busiest days of the year in terms of number of calvings that are coming. But in reality, I've said it before in the show, Jack, it's probably March is a very busy month as well, because you've all the calves to feed and then you've all the cows have calved, and then there's problems in March. So look, we're probably in a kind of a honeymoon phase yet in terms of calving. Problems will start in March, and then, you know, we'll
sheds are full at that stage as well.
I mean, so the dry weather in February is probably helping Aidan. Oh, like, I mean, our guys getting calved cows out, maybe not up in calving, like, you know what I mean? Like, but yeah, no, you know, down where the cows are, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
To be fair, all over the country, I mean, I'm ringing around lads for the grass page yesterday, like, there's you know, there is a lot of grazing have to be done, even on traditionally heavy ground and in heavy areas, because the weather has been so good. And they're 100% correct to go out and start grazing now, because who knows, Jack, we could be in for 3 or 4 weeks of March yet. Mm. Like, I hope we won't, but like, it's we just don't know. We need to take the opportunities when we get them. So it's great to have the chance.
Calf prices, Darren or Adam, was it mentioned he's talking them down already? Like, you know what I mean? They're hardly they're not born. The majority of them aren't born yet. Adam is talking down the price of the calves, like, you know. So I mean, it's early days for that beef bred animal out of the dairy cows, like.
It is, but there is a lot more beef bred animals going to come early this year as well, to be fair, because farmers are using more sex semen on their selected number of cows to get their ideal heifer calf out of them, and then they're putting in, you know, their AI bred beef bull into that, or AI sired beef breed into the cow as well. So on those cows that don't want, so there will be early beef calves. Yes, I'd say, look, it's going to be a challenge in terms of the price, because there's going to be more of them around. But look, I mean, what the dairy farmer wants, I suppose, in the main, is to be able to have a market for those calves. And that means they're going to be at a lower price, but there's a market for them. I think they'll take it. But look, who knows? It's early days.
We'll watch it. Yeah, exactly. We'll follow it tightly over the next couple of weeks. Siobhan, like, are you really cross with Aidan and his likes, like, you know, in terms of the dairy farmers? Like,
No, I'm not really cross.
Very cross.
In fairness, Aidan, you wrote about this when this started to happen.
Siobhan, on a scale of 1 to 10, how cross are you? Like,
look, I don't want to get into it, Jack, or I mightn't be able to continue to talk. Like, but,
I know.
You know,
in fairness,
the dairy farmers flagged this. You know, they said this, the sector this will hurt is tillage and beef as well. Like, those dry stock farmers can't rent land either. So I'm disappointed more than angry, Jack, because, you know, I get very excited when I hear a minister. You know, it's been a long time since we had a minister talking about tillage
positive and talking about
you know, how important the tillage sector is.
Yeah.
And then for them just to ignore this policy when it was flagged to them, you know, it's just hugely disappointing.
Now, they'll say, like, I mean, in fairness, that this, and they're doing it for environmental reasons. Aidan's guys are polluting the waters and this kind of thing. Like, I mean, Aidan, maybe you come in on that. Like, is that happening? And is this extra land that you want for paper acres to dilute your organic nitrogen, will it have a positive effect on the environment? Like,
well, there's two elements to it, Jack. There's the banding, number one, which, you know, is science-based. You can't really argue against banding and the impact of that, and I don't. But the other big thing that's, I'd say, the major increase in the demand for land is this, the threat of the 250 kilos in the derogation going back to 220. That's the big issue. And Jack, science is not backing that up. You know, we need the Irish government to go back to Brussels and defend the science that we have in Ireland, to say that there's no reason why we shouldn't maintain at the 250. And that would solve most of the problems, I'd say, Siobhan is experiencing. Yeah. So
now, Siobhan, the other sector that's taken land from you, of course, is solar panels. You mentioned it this week in the journal. Like, there's a lot of your farmers thinking of maybe investing in solar panels and creating solar farms, even maybe it's only on a portion of the farms. Like, you know, I mean, that's another piece of the competition.
Yeah, so some of that demand is coming from they're losing leases where solar farms are going to go in, so the farmer that owns the land is going to put a solar farmer on that land. But then the reality is there's a lot of tillage farmers going into solar, and that's because the income simply isn't there for them. Maybe they don't have the scale, but tillage farmers, this is 2023 is going to be an extremely difficult year, and the years ahead, because of convergence, and we showed that. It's in the CAP booklet this week.
So just explain that now to our listeners and our audience again. You were saying that the single farm payment check, or the BPS, or the BIS now, that's coming into tillage farmers,
it's getting smaller. Yeah, and we have four examples there in the CAP booklet this week, and in all four, I think they lose out. In some ways, they might gain a few bob here and there, but in the main, they're going to miss out. They're going to be in the red.
But you had it for long enough, Siobhan. Like, you had 20 good years of it. Like, you know what I mean? What's wrong with that? Like,
there's farms out there. You know, there's big tillage farms out there.
Are you ignoring my question? Like, are you going
no,
to
I'm not.
No,
I'm going to answer.
There's
big tillage farms out there, and they're getting big payments. And you see some of them there. They're in the top list. But that payment goes straight back to the farmer that owns the land the minute they get that payment. The next day, it's gone. But then I think where convergence and the reduction in cap payments is really going to hit is the normal size farm, the 100 acre farm in the Midlands, in Offaly, in Kilkenny, in Laois. Those farmers, it's effectively going to make those farms a part-time farm. And you know, so while we have all
part-time now, because we would have said you're part-time already. Just another little part on top of
that.
Yeah,
like, we're playing at 6 o'clock
in the morning.
So look, while it's, you know, it's all well and grand for the minister to say, you know, super tillage, but he allowed convergence to go ahead. And I know the EU had to as well.
Now, so we've talked kind of in general, folks, last couple of minutes, like we've talked in general about some of the challenges, some of the opportunities, but like it's fair to say prices, of output prices, beef, sheep, milk, grain have never been as strong. Like, you know, so we're here in a room full of enthusiastic young agricultural graduates that are going to go working in the farm business, in agribusiness, at farms, at home. Like, I mean, would you be positive, or is it doom and gloom from here on? Because it only go one way, is it down? Like, you know, or where do you see kind of that price piece settling? Like,
I think you'd have to be positive, but you'd have to be also conscious of the challenges that are there at present. And the challenges with input costs, I think that they will have to say change and come back. But the policy thing is a worry, because it's not only around nitrates, it's around where the support is going around organics. So they're pushing more. And maybe that is the way it is, but a lot of farmers don't like to be sort of taking the sort of foot off the throttle.
The natural will of a farmer is that he or she is to grow and develop and make it better.
And there's nothing to say the farming is going to have to change. We're going to have to reduce our reliance on inputs like fertilizer in the future, because not only will the cost be there, there'll be issues around supply, there'll be issues around everything. But I think farming is there for that challenge. But at the moment, there will be a few difficult years, I think, that'll take a while to get over this input cost challenge.
Adam, will you be able to differentiate? You touched off it there. Will you be, like, you talked about suckler cow declining, but I mean, there's still going to be a level of suckler cows. There's going to be places, there's going to be farms all over Ireland that are going to still have suckler cows in 5-10 years time. Like, will they be able to get a premium for that product, do you reckon, or will it be just mixed in with the dairy beef piece, or how do you see that playing out over the next 5 years?
I think we'll need it, Jack, and there's already sort of, you know, work started on that in terms of a suckler beef brand. I think we'll have to differentiate between it if we're really to keep that suckler beef brand. And that suckler beef brand is really, really important to this country in terms of marketing beef. Like, you pick up a pamphlet across Europe marketing Irish beef, it's not Jersey Bull calves on the front of that. It's good quality Charlie, Angus, Limousine, Simmental, whatever breed it is. That's what we're marketing all our beef on the back of, and we need to be very, very careful about letting that suckler herd drop to a point that it's really not, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. I think there's a massive amount of positivity in the suckling sector at the moment. You know, weanlings, €4 a kilo, they're in March over the last 7 days. You know, there's a new suckler scheme coming in, and it's going to be €2.40 a cow for the first 10 and €1.90 after that. That's positive as well, you know. You're seeing that out there around the ring in terms of replacement heifers being, you know, there's big money being paid out there at the moment, but we needed that. Suckling for the last 5-6 years has really been on a downward trend. And
I mean, am I right in saying beef price, because it's high, is driving that, like, to an extent? Like, you know what I mean? That suckler cow, that replacement price is high because of...
Absolutely. It's all knocking back because the big feedlots and the finishers, they're paying that big money around the ring. So the suckler farmer is getting rewarded for that. So then there's a bit of confidence there. Cold cows at the moment, Jack, up at 2,500, you know, 3,000. So you're going back out to, it's not taking much to replace them. So there's definitely, but the similar challenges of what Darren talked about, you've all those input prices up, but I think the future for the Irish suckler herd, I think, is pretty positive at the moment.
Aidan, on the dairy side, positivity?
Sure, you'd have to be very positive, Jack. You see global supply, you know, stagnating at best and declining in reality probably in many of the key export markets. So definitely, you know, demand for dairy is going to increase. Supply is not going to increase. The price is likely to level off at a higher level than it was in the past. Look, there are input cost challenges.
I mean, coming back to Darren's piece, is it the biggest challenge of all the sectors? It's probably one of the biggest challenges.
We're one of the biggest users of inputs, but we've scoped there. If we get our grassland management right, get our clover established in farms, get our system right, that we're not very reliant on the use of inputs, I think we've scoped there to maintain profitability.
So, Aidan, I see zero grazes every road in the country. I see, a lot of farmers putting more cows on a smaller area. Do you see that continuing?
Sure. I think regulations, we spoke about nitrates and banding, that's going to impact on that, you know. Right. And it's not the road we want to go down. And you know, no offence to anyone that has those zero grazes or anything else, but you can see there is extra nitrate loading on the home block as a result of them.
Right.
So we have to be careful. We have to protect where we're at, you know, in terms of
the farms and how much nutrients we're bringing onto those blocks. So I don't think it's going to be a feature. You know, it's going to grow at least. I don't think it's going to grow at least. It will maintain a feature, and it's allowing some farmers to remain viable where maybe the very fragmented farms.
So as you say, if there's a very high nutrient load coming on that farm, that's a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for the farm down the.
It is, because
future.
Look, and the issue with nitrates is the amount of loading that's in the catchment, and if you're bringing in an awful lot of grass from outside and bring it onto whether you're feeding it in the shed or out the field or wherever you're feeding it, it's not possible that all the nutrients from that grass is going to go back to the farm that it came on. So there isn't more nutrient loading at home.
Excellent. Thanks, Aidan. Siobhan, we're coming to the end of the first half in this very special show here in UCD. Again, grain, tillage area, positivity from your side looking forward and for, I suppose, the advice for young people here sitting in the audience in terms of staying involved in the ag side?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I know I've been a bit negative so far, but like,
you've been very cross with
Aidan.
Look at
23. Like, we had price, we had weather, and we had yield, and we had a really good year. I think there is more of a focus on tillage being that environmentally friendly sector. I was in Tirlon on Monday, and I saw millions upon millions being invested into an innovation and research centre where they were looking at Irish oats. What can we do with them? They were putting it into plant-based cheese, if I'm allowed to say it. They were making ice cream. They were, you know, I tasted chocolate and it tasted no different. There was no milk in it. And that was Irish oats that were going into that. You know, yesterday, Dairy Gold came out with a price of €285 per tonne.
How does that rank now relative to last 10 years?
Well, sure. Look, I mean, you could have been getting paid. Last year, we had high prices. We had about €355, I think, Dairy Gold paid last year. But in other years, you could have been down at the €240. But the reason Dairy Gold brought out that price is to encourage farmers to grow protein. They'll get their protein payment. They won't have any nitrogen on those crops, but they want an Irish ration. They want Irish protein in that ration. And they realise that, you know, Irish ingredients have a lower carbon footprint. And that's definitely a positive going forward.
So the margin for the farmer in those crops like might be as good as some of the where they're using the high inputs. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, like, yeah. And there's kind of a fear. I'd say, in fairness to Dairy Gold, one of the reasons they brought out the price was because they're afraid that beans acreage wouldn't increase. And there is a target there to increase that area. And people, you know, maybe they were afraid they'll still sow cereals because people think the price might go up higher and they won't sow the beans. But anyone who had beans last year and got paid €355 a ton, got a protein payment of 300. That crop made them money. It's a low input crop, and you know that's where tillage farmers need to be looking. They need, you know, we can't just be continuous spring barley anymore. We have to diversify.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Siobhan. Darren, you want to come in a quick one? Yeah,
just very quick, Jack. I do think, say, over the next 5 years, there is going to be a realization that the last 5 years might have been the wrong direction of where we're going for now on the policy side.
Yes, I hear you.
Like, if we look at, say, the environment is going to be every bit as important. The next cap that comes after this, you'll see more environmental weight.
Yeah.
But I hope that you'll see more of a link back to supporting the primary producer, balancing the two of them together, because food security is coming back strong on the agenda again. And Siobhan mentioned it there, is that, say, ag graduates sitting here today, I think over the next 10 years, there's going to be huge demand around policy side, around new technologies, and right, not only in Ireland, but right across Europe and further afield, because Ireland, I suppose, has the potential to be a leader on that. And the last thing I'd say is that we're in a situation in Ireland where production is going down, but production is going down at an alarming rate all across Europe. We're able to supply those, say, high, I suppose, more affluent consumers, hopefully
with a premium product.
We'll be given the license to do that in the next cap.
Okay, if you're staying for the second half of the show, please wait. We'll be back in just 2 seconds. Right, folks, welcome back to the second half of the show, the very special show here with AgSoc in UCD. It's AgSoc Week. We're here in the village in UCD, and this is the second half of a very good show that I'm sure you've listened to already before the first half. I'm joined here, as I said at the start, by Amy, Kira, Robert and Niamh. Robert, I come to you first, because if I go to the ladies, I might never get back. Like, Robert, in terms of your career maybe to date in ag science and where you're from, maybe just give us a kind of a brief introduction. And you're working for the Journal now, right?
Yeah, so started with the Journal last September. I'm working in the marketing department on the customer support team. My background is like many other ag students, but I suppose I'm the black sheep in the room. I'm a WIT graduate, and I'm still continuing my studies at the minute.
You're brave to say that. No, oh, brave. Yeah, you could have just made it up for the,
I just had to get out there. But no, still continuing my studies, doing a part-time master's in organic and biological agriculture down in WIT, or now it's called C2. So look, at my career has been short so far, but very good. Got off on a good foot there with the journal. Before that, relief milking, working in a local co-op, still relief milking, trying to pay bills, but
it's the job.
That's where I'm at now.
And you're from Athboy County Mead. You're actually from a small Gaeltacht area.
Yeah, from a small Gaeltacht area.
So you have a couple of focal, haven't you?
Yeah. A couple of focal on them, yeah.
like our resident Gaeltacht speaker here, Amy Ford. Like, she's very good at it now. Like, so she is like,
yeah. No, I come from Redcar.
She bluffs her way through TG Cahar every now and again. Like, it's the kind of way, like,
We're way over on the East Coast. We think we're the Connemara people, but yeah. That's where I'm from. Small Gaeltacht area between Trim and Athboy.
How big is that area? I actually didn't realise there was a Gaeltacht area there, Robert.
Wouldn't be big at all. Right. There's not even a GA club for Athcairn. They play for Athboy Clonagael. So, it's relatively small. Yeah.
Okay, back to you in a minute, Robert. Niamh, any truth to the rumour?
I don't know now. Yes.
No, do you know what a piece around Tullamore Farm and lying in the straw?
Oh, I don't know. I can't believe that now. I'm not going to give anything away, but...
Tell us, and tell the audience, like, in terms of, you were out in work experience, you were with us in the Farmers Journal. Part of it was down at Tullamore Farm with the beef, the suckler and sheep farm that's there. Like, just give it a potted history of where you are, where you're from, for those that don't know, and what you're about to do now.
Yeah, so my name's Niamh Gunn. I'm from County Cavan, and I grew up on a sheep and beef farm. And I suppose I always had an interest in agriculture from a very young age. I remember doing the heifer and hog competition years ago, which was a great shout, and actually built up my interest in it as well. And then I decided to go to UCD to study food and agribusiness management. So that's where I am today. And I actually did a study abroad in Purdue University last year. So that was a great insight into the agriculture industry over there.
Why did you decide to go there?
I suppose I thought it would be a good holiday as well. And it was a brilliant opportunity during COVID as well. Like, lots of people were locked up and we were able to get out and see the world. So
what's over there in Purdue? What, you know, when you said it was a study trip, like, you know, for the week that you were on studying, what did you do, or what did you...
Yeah, so when we were over there, we were there for 5 months, and I was studying agriculture economics. Now, it's very different to the Irish system here. There's not as much priority, and there's no Ryans or Coffers now, but it's still very good.
Oh, wax auctions. Like, what was that? We must get back to the wax auction in a minute. Like, I might come to you on the wax auction, okay? Like,
But it was a brilliant experience. Like, I think we traveled to New York and Nashville when we were off, and Chicago, and it was brilliant. Yeah, I definitely recommend for anyone that's here today that's thinking of doing a study abroad, to highly recommend to do it now.
How long were you with us in the journal?
God, it seems like ages now. Well, I started, I think, last January. I remember I actually emailed Adam after Christmas, and he was like, will you start working tomorrow, maybe?
He always plans 6 months ahead. Like, yeah.
And so I started in an editorial. So I was working under the livestock team. So I was going to marts and seeing different things every day. And then I actually went on to work a bit with the news team with Amy, and even the Irish Country Living as well. I did a summer series with that, with rural agriculture shows. And then later on, I said, I might as well, when I'm here, go to the commercial side of the house. And I went to that, and I actually really enjoyed it too, in sales and customer service as well.
Excellent. Back to you in a minute, Niamh. Kira, I come to you next. AgSoc week nearly finished for this week. I'd say you must be happy at this stage, are you?
Oh, delighted. Yeah. It's just been a complete success.
A lot of work goes into preparing the various events, etc., and all that kind of thing.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. No, look, preparation for Ag Week now starts way back in September. But look, it's paid off. It's well worth it. And I have a great committee behind me that made everything, you know, so much easier.
The wax auctions. What's going on? What were they?
Oh, sure.
What?
Look.
What?
Sure. That's one of the highlights now every year.
Go
so.
On. Do you know something about it? No?
I definitely don't.
Go on, Kira. Give us a pop. Now, remember, we're live here and we're recording. Like, you know, so.
I'll keep it PG. Yeah, no, so basically the lads kind of, they get their chest out or their legs off, out, or, like, yeah. And we bet away there and we auction them off, and whoever gets the highest bid gets to pull the wax strips.
Oh,
it's the
that's
long
the
and short
of it
there,
like,
now.
Yeah, oh, I know. Very good.
Don't know what you're looking at me for.
Could you see? Could you see yourself fitting on that, Amy? Like, could you, like? Yeah.
Oh, definitely for a bit of a calf or a thigh or something. Yeah, definitely not. Like,
more,
good long strip now.
The more
like,
pain, the
more
better.
Pain, like, the better. Yeah, exactly. Geez.
Kira, again, just maybe give us a brief history of you, what stage you're at, etc., and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, look, my name's Kira Byers, and I come from Cavan, like Niamh there over there, and best county, maybe.
Good representation from Cavan, actually. Look,
So look. I'm studying animal and crop production, and I'm fourth year now, so into my final semester, going to be graduating, fingers crossed now, in September. But no, it's been a great 4 years here, and I come from a dairy farm at home, and I've been lucky enough to be elected as the AgSoc auditor this year. So,
You play, unlike our resident Camogie player here beside us, you play a bit of rugby.
I do.
Where do you play with, or where do you play?
I was playing there with Virginia since I could nearly walk, and I played with Old Belvo up here in Dublin and with UCD when I was in first year, but I had to hang up the boots there now. Got a bit too busy, you know.
Okay. Kira, back to you in a minute. Amy, speaking of hanging up boots, like, you know, are you still poking the ball?
No, they're hung up.
Are they hung up? Seriously? Is it all over?
Went out in a high with league and championship.
Did you?
Jack pitted me as a Camogie legend, but it's only junior Camogie, so no one will get ahead of themselves here now. Junior Camogie in Dublin for the last, I suppose, nearly 9 years. Nine years in Dublin.
But, like, I mean, you know, a Galway person playing in Dublin, like, you know, the quality, you're probably bringing a lot of quality to the team. Like,
I think
you,
like, so. Like, two medals for it now. Yeah, I'll take that. Like, experience, I think that's called.
Amy, tell the audience and tell our listeners you're working on the news team in the Farmers Journal.
Yeah, I'm actually 6 years in the Journal next month. Happy anniversary to me. I'm the deputy news editor there. 6 years here.
Today, like?
Next month. So we're only in February, March.
All right,
So work on the news team. As Jack said, I work under Katrina Morrissey. And then there's the rest of the news team. There's a good squad of us there from kind of all corners of the country. I'm from County Galway, not from a farm, another black sheep, not an ag. I went the decided I think I'd go teaching and then saw the light. So I was in the middle of an arts degree and then said no. So I stuck to the chicken fillet rolls and went on, finished with Gaeilge and geography. And then I did a master's in journalism, and then that landed me kind of in ag journalism.
You didn't say where you did it.
I did in Galway, like, of course. How could you go from Galway? I was unreal.
Right, okay.
So I did the undergrad there and then moved to Dublin 9 years ago for the master's.
Yeah, are you happy to be working in the ag scene? Like,
yeah, I am. It's completely different.
Like, you're from a rural area, like, it wasn't as if you were coming, you know, I mean,
From a farming background.
Yeah, from a farming background.
Look, all my grandparents farmed. My parents are from farms. It's not like it's, you know, mad to me or anything. You can turn one end of a bullock from the other, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting sector, I suppose, compared to if you're in any other sector or just normal news, shall we say. Because that's what I would do, news. Like, I'm not in Marts. I'm not.
Right.
I'm not like everyone else who's sitting at a combine, Siobhan. I do sit down, but not as much as you. Or calving cows, lambing yours, or anything else.
Typical week, Amy, for you, like on the kind of news team. Like, it could be following a grain story. It could be following a dairy story.
It could be anything. That's the other thing. There's no week that's the same. And I suppose this year, and I don't know if anyone else on the team has thought it, but it's been so busy in terms of news. Like, we've been out the gap every week from tillage stories, Siobhan, to, milk prices. As we said, nitrates is never ending cap, obviously whole new cap from this year, and there's a whole rake of schemes going with that, and Darren's unboxed all that or unpacked all of that this week in the cap magazine. So it's been really busy, but normal week, Monday, look, we have a news call at 10 o'clock where everyone in editorial gives what news they have for the week, and that all feeds into the news pages up the front, the front page. Some weeks we might know what we're putting on the front on a Monday, other days it could be 3 o'clock on a Wednesday, at which time no one wants to see myself, Katrina or Jack usually, because we'll be up to high dough. But every week is different in the job as well, between meetings or online.
Yeah, I mean, you do a lot of reporting, like you're going across the country, or going to organise meetings or just meeting farmers or meeting
protests,
Like,
anything.
it's really varied, and like no week is the same really, like events like this, the odd gig like this, it's really good as well.
And of course you're relatively unique in the journal, Amy, in that you're actually qualified in journalism. Yeah. Like a lot of us are pseudo journalists, like we're ag science scientists, I suppose, at heart, but trying to get away as journalists, like
you manage it, like we help you with that.
Yeah, oh, you help us with spelling. Help us with spelling.
Look, our job is really to, there's a story, and what is the best way of telling that story to our readers so that it's readable. Like, and I'd often think, you know, what does my dad think of this reading this? Like, can he understand it? Like, and vice versa, whatever. Yeah. So it's basically arranging words in a way that is readable, and I suppose what we do is educate, inform, and entertain at times then as well, Jack.
Absolutely. Robert, like, I mean, your role in the journal is very varied as well. Like, I mean, we had a series of CAP meetings starting in November, December, you know, running right through and into January, like getting people to know that these shows are on, etc., and that kind of thing is a big job as well. Like, and that's part of your role, you know, along with setting up the event and setting up all the speakers, etc. That's you know, there's a bit of organising in your role as well. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Look, my role is mainly inside with our colleague Mags O'Connor there, taking calls and queries and handling any problems with the rest.
What's
of
the most common problem now? Just be careful now. What's the most common query that you're getting at the moment? Ooh. Like these days, like, yeah.
How do I get the app to work?
How do I get the app to work?
How do I get the paper up in front of me in the app? Yeah. The odd time there might be a slip with imposter and something. Home delivery papers might be delivered. So then you're dealing with impost and other courier services. And the Irish Times getting papers delivered to everyone and the shops as well. Yeah. That's the circulation side of the marketing department. But I've been very fortunate to be on the college road trip or the college road show this year as well. Went around to nearly all the colleges.
Including UCD, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I wasn't here for that one now. But okay. I've done an awful lot of events and it's been great. It's been varied. You know, you're not just stuck in at the laptop and the phone the whole time, out in the road and meeting people and chatting to people. We only had the Mullingar CAP meeting there the week before last. Yeah. And that was a great success. Mm. Really, really great success. But yeah, the role is varied, and talking to an awful lot of people every day, which is enjoyable. So yeah, that's the ins and outs of my job.
Niamh, in terms of what you're hoping to do kind of post UCD, like, will you stay eating chicken, what you said, chicken fillet rolls, will you stay eating chicken fillet rolls here for another while, or will you branch out into something else? What are you thinking?
Yeah, well, I suppose a lot of people here today are everyone's kind of wondering, what am I going to do next year? It's on everyone's thoughts. And obviously 4 years, a hard enough year doing all your study and applying for graduate programs. So I actually decided that I'm going to go traveling for a year. So I'm actually hoping to go to New Zealand, and actually arranged it last night. It's actually a dairy farmer over there from Monaghan. So his name's Olin Greenan. So I'm going to be working over there for a year, hopefully. I'm going in June, so it'll be busy. He's actually moving farm now. So he has 800 cows calving down. So it'll be a brilliant experience just to get an insight into the system over there. Like, I come from a sheep and beef farm, so I don't have much insight into the dairy side of the house, but it's a good opportunity just to see the world and, I suppose, make up my mind what I'm going to do in the future as well. Mm.
So you're going to be in the North Island of New Zealand, where, not far from where all the flooding is at the moment, etc. Kind of
yeah, it looks really bad. He said it, he was actually lucky enough, but there's a lot of, especially tillage farms, underwater at the moment. So, yeah, it's not
so
good.
So tell me, have you done any experience now? You're going out to this 800 cow farm. Like, have you done any milking experience or have you done any...
Well,
no,
I've
even
done
a weekend, like you do a weekend. No,
well, I've done a bit of relief milking, but that's about it. In terms of calf rearing or any of that, I wouldn't have a clue. I'm more used to lambing down now, the lambs and ewes in the springtime. But sure, look at when you have the interest, it's once that's there, that's the main thing.
And Niamh, so when are you planning to go? When are you?
Yeah, straight after my exam. So I'm actually going to miss my graduation, but we'll horse on anyways and get through it.
So what's that now? When are you going to start? Like, what's, give me a date in terms of New Zealand. I'm just trying to compare what time of the year it'll be at in New Zealand.
Yeah, so I'm actually leaving at the end of May, and then I'm going to Thailand for 4 weeks, and then I'm going to arrive there on the 1st of July. So that's when they start calving over
there. Exactly. So that's it. That's their spring, the 1st of July next year. Kira, any intention of going traveling?
Oh, yeah. I'm on that plane as well.
New Zealand, no.
No. I'm thinking of heading to Australia now. Instead.
Oh, yeah, that's a far away.
I'm going to wait for my graduation, though. I've worked hard enough for the last 4 years. I might as well get a nice photo on the day.
And come here, will you stay? And I mean, you know, don't tell me if you don't have to, but will you stay in the farming space in New in Australia, or what's the plan?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's the plan anyway. I wouldn't mind doing a harvest or going working on a dairy farm now or something. So no definite plans in place just yet. But look, I was in America there for 3 months with my friend Roisin on placement last summer, and I absolutely love that. So a big dairy farm out there. So.
Oh, yeah, right. And was there an Irish connection to the farm?
Yeah, it was at Drumgoon Dairy, actually. Yeah. Rodney moved away there from Monaghan. So,
what do you think of that setup? Like, it's a very different setup to obviously an Irish setup. Indoors, all year round, huge pits of maize, the whole lot.
I learned a lot on the nutrition side of things. Like, you know, it's so important out there because obviously, it's all measured. You know, your grass varies every day here from morning to the evening. Like, you know, whereas everything's tested, everything's measured. But no, it was brilliant.
And any big animal health issues? Like, I remember when I was in Germany on a similar setup in terms of all indoor calving and all that, we had one or two displaced abomasums every day. You know, I mean, it was literally routine that you'd get a couple. It was only, we didn't have the scale that you had. It was only 600 cows where I was, like, you know, but you would get regular animal health issues, like, wouldn't you? Like,
Definitely. Yeah. Like, the fresh calved cows and heifers, like, they are kept in a separate pen for 2 weeks and they're checked every day. And, you know, you'd see, as we call them, ORPs, like retained placenta. And all that sort of thing on the regular, you know. And I brought that home. You know, brilliant experience. You know, just to be able to apply that at home.
I mean, even though we're a different type of system, like the skill set that you could build up in terms of the animal health, like in no more than New Zealand, Niamh. Like, you know, when you actually learn how to feed calves, they'll be the very same over here. Like, I mean, Amy, did you go travelling at all? Like,
no. And listening here now, I might head off to Australia or something.
It sounds exciting, doesn't it? Like,
I won't regret. I didn't do a J1 either, so But like, in fairness, it's journal, and in this, like, you do get a lot of traveling. Like, got to go to Iceland and Brazil, which was completely different, eye-opening. Saudi Arabia and kind of other place, mad kind of far-flung place you wouldn't be thinking of going. But like, that's a great advice. If I was talking to my younger self, either do the J1 or go traveling after you finish up, would be the one thing I'd say anyway.
Right, folks, we're going to come through a couple of questions in the audience. Adam has our microphone, so remember, a hoodie or a jacket, I'm not sure what it is, for the first six questions. So who'll kick us off? We just have to speak into the microphone just to make sure they get the sound right. Any question for either Adam and that panel, or for my panel here with Amy here at the moment? Shout out, put up your hand there and get the microphone into Adam right there in the center. Adam,
mad for jackets.
Nice one. Yeah,
my name's Marie Gray and I'm there, and my question first, just mentioned organic pass, and across the entire sector of agriculture, do you think there's a space for the drive for the extra production and going forward in organics? Or do you think it'll have to be sold as commercial product and take the loss?
Great question. Excellent. Well done. So briefly repeat the question. The question is, like, there's going to be a lot more organics, we would say, food coming in terms of any organic meat and organic lamb and organic grain and milk. Is there going to be a market for it? Adam, you start off. You with the microphone. And we'll get a quick comment then into Darren, Siobhan and Aidan, if he's still around. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not there at the moment, Jack. We're depending on sort of supports from policy and from EU government, or from our national government as well, in terms of that €300 a hectare. And it's a really long play in terms of getting into some of those organic markets, and it's an extra cost as well. And we're seeing some of that sort of high level stuff under pressure over the last couple of months. So I don't think it's there, and I think it's a really, really long play. I don't know, has Darren maybe on the lamb side?
Exactly the same. We probably aren't going to see as much production as what we thought either, because one of the things I'm seeing at the moment is that it's very extensive systems that are going organic. So there used to be a requirement that you have to have a minimum of 0.5 livestock units per hectare. They removed that this year, and a lot of more extensive sheep and suckler or beef systems are going in. So while there might be a significant increase in the volume, or the area of, say, organics, to hit that 7.5% target, we're not going to have a relative increase in produce. And I think that even without that, a lot of the produce is going to continue to be sold into commodity markets as opposed to an organic premium, with the exception of dairy and tillage.
So what I'm hearing from the first two, I'll come to you now in a second, Siobhan, but the first two, what I'm hearing is that effectively any extra meat that's going to be produced in under an organic label, you're not going to get a premium for it, but you're getting the €300 per hectare premium for your land, and that's your bonus when you're in terms of that organic system.
And the department would say, Jack, that's a compensation there at the moment, and that they would say that their goal is to be in a position that next time around, or the next organic scheme, or that over the next few years, they will develop premium markets. Now, I don't think they had seen, or when the cap was being drawn up, that it would be happening against the backdrop of such inflation, such pressure on consumer spending. So that in the medium term, I think that it's going to be difficult to grow organic premium markets.
Okay. Siobhan, on the grain, on the tillage side?
On the tillage side, like Flavins have built up the organic oats demand. You know, they built that up, and now I suppose they're at the peak of that demand at the minute. They're still trying to grow markets, but there's a queue to get into Flavins. And they're a premium product, and that's what we need to be growing. There's other niche markets for malt and barley, but until there's a massive increase in dairy, beef or sheep, you know, I wouldn't be rushing as a tillage farmer to go into organics because the demand needs to be there first.
Okay, so thank you very much. Great question. Aidan, I don't see him. I think he's gone out on the phone call. Is he? Yeah. Oh, he's there. Sorry, Aidan. Yeah, he's there. Yeah, no, we were just talking organics. The question came in terms of organics. Is there going to be a market for organic produce? And we've gone through meat, the beef, lamb and the grain side. Just on the dairy side, I suppose, in terms of organic milk, is that a growth area for organic milk, you know?
I don't think it is, to be honest, Jack. They say it is, but I mean, and they also say it's a chicken and egg situation. If we have the product, we'll be able to sell it. And if we don't have the product, we can't sell it. But I mean, if the growth areas seem to be overseas, not in Ireland, they're particularly strong in Germany. But again, that's very much, it's seen as a luxury product. So if there's a recession in Europe, the demand for organic products is going to fall. Maybe you've covered that already. The biggest issue I see with organic dairying is that the production system is different. You have to produce milk all year round. It's a higher cost system. They're paying €1,100 a ton for organic dairy nuts at the moment. I think there's only one supplier left in the country. And the majority of that feed is imported from far-flung places such as India and so forth. So you'd have to question the carbon footprint of that. I think it's very difficult. If you looked at the last 12 months, the price of conventional product far outweighed the price for organic milk. So what's the incentive for someone to get into organic dairy?
Yeah, I think it came up, Darren. Thanks, Aidan. I think it came up at the West Lodge in Bantry last night in terms of, you know, even though it's €1,200 a ton for the meal, they couldn't actually get it. It wasn't even available, even at €1,200 a ton. That was the Hill Sheep Conference that was on in Bantry last night. Great question. I hope we've answered it. Adam, you have another question there.
I thought I had, but was there another hand up here? No.
In the area in the centre, yeah.
Keane Oliver, I suppose, a broken labourer, Robert down there, Bohemian County Meath.
Good man, Keane.
I'm just asking, I suppose, in the kind of sheep department, we're seeing the likes of the national flock going down, the likes of Conacre and Dairyman taking away all the land. But can you see kind of the demise of the sheep industry, even scanner results this year down, I suppose, climate change and global warming knocking back the rams last summer and scanner results way down. But is there seems to be more and more threats to sheep farming. Can we see kind of that industry just going?
Right, nice one. Good man, Keane. Very, very clear. Like the sheep sector, the sheep industry, the challenges that it has, can you see it continuing? Darren?
It has a lot of challenges. I do think that there will be a marked or significant reduction in the breeding yore numbers this year coming. I'd say we'll probably go back to 2018 levels where there was 500,000 yores killed. Last year, there was only 350,000 yores killed, and that was coming in 2018 on the back of, I suppose, challenges not as severe as what we're seeing at the moment. Probably what I see more is the sheep being pushed more to the marginal areas. So in counties, Wexford, Carlow, Tipperary, Kilkenny, Cork, all say in those areas, the drive for land will push sheep in those areas right to the marginal areas. No different than what happened in New Zealand. But outside of that, then I see that there is stability in other areas. We're going to see a continued increase in numbers, I'd say, this year in Mayo, Galway, Sligo, Leitrim, all the areas where there's more marginal nature. And I think a lot of that is to do with, yes, we have a higher cost base at the moment, but in general, relative to other sectors, we don't have the same, say, maybe extremes of cost. But I do think numbers will fall, but I don't see them falling, say, hugely. I'd say it'll probably go back maybe 100, 200,000 and then probably stabilising after that. But 2023 will be a challenge.
Okay, nice one. Thank you very much, Darren. Next question in there again in the middle, Adam. Yeah.
Matthew Murphy, I'm from St. Mullins, County Carlow. And with Bonterra banning the on-farm slaughter of the non-replacement calves, how do you feel that'll affect the beef trade in Ireland or worldwide anyway?
Yeah. Okay, so Fonterra, the biggest cooperative in New Zealand, recently banned the on-farm slaughter of calves on farms in New Zealand. So I'll come to Aidan as well. But I mean, Adam, I suppose the question is kind of the global beef market. Like, you know what I mean? Do you think it'll have an impact? Now, obviously not now, but maybe in a couple of years' time, or what's the thing?
Possibly it could, I suppose, in terms of extra supply. You're always worried about that as regards where that's coming from. I suppose as regards carcass weight and stuff like that. I don't know what sort of a system they'll go into, but I would suggest there won't be, you know, huge volumes maybe in terms of coming off that beef, and maybe they'll go into a veal system or something like that. But in terms of, I suppose, it's increased production, and that's be a possibly a worry. You know, Aidan might be closer to that in terms of what's happening over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my understanding, Jack, and I could be wrong, but it's the on-farm slaughter of calves. So the bobby calf trade is still permissible in New Zealand. It's just that they're not being slaughtered on farm, which was happening in a relatively small proportion of farms are still actually killing their calves on the farm. So that's my understanding. I could be wrong on that now.
No. Yeah, exactly. So now, but again, that could have been a relatively large proportion. We don't know. We don't have real numbers in terms of, Yeah.
There was definitely, I was last there in 2018, and it was still happening, you know, fairly widespread on some of the farms, particularly around the South Island. But I mean, they had more rigorous standards around the bobby calf and the fact that they had to be on the farm for so much longer, and they had to be a certain weight and walking onto the, you know, dry navels and walking onto the transport and all the rest.
And I suppose, Aidan, to bring that then back home in terms of the slaughtering of calves, like it was only minuscule relative to the overall crop here, I suppose, in Ireland, but as well compared to New Zealand. But that's banned from, is it from 1st January next
2024.
Year?
2024. So this spring will be the last spring that farmers, and it was very, as you say, a very small number, and some of those were being slaughtered for health reasons, TB outbreaks in the herd, hadn't the capacity to rear all calves and so forth. But there was, you know, you have to acknowledge, there was a significant cohort, around 100 farmers were submitting about half the number of calves being slaughtered. I think is that the figure correct? Yeah. And so they are now going to change their breeding plan in order to have a calf that's more saleable.
Okay, excellent. Thanks for that. Any other questions there now? Yeah, excellent. Two more, three more. Yeah, lovely.
Owen Byrne from Wicklow here. You mentioned the pressure for land through multiple sectors there, and Siobhan was talking about tillage being squeezed a bit more as well. Hmm. The new kind of incentives for AD plants coming into Ireland recently, is there going to be a market or a supply of land to produce feedstock for them good plants?
Man. Yeah, well done. Great question, Owen. Like, so looking ahead into the future, as you say, and the push that's coming from the government again in terms of putting more anaerobic digestion plants up and going, I suppose in terms of, Siobhan, getting feedstock, whether it's grass or maize or whatever, growing them for anaerobic digestion plants, like where is it going to come from?
Yes, there will be. And I suppose
will hybrid, be what?
There will be demand for those crops. Like, and there's hybrid rye is one crop that we would look at in the tillage sector as one that would be, you know, tillage farmers, I think, would be quite happy to grow for those plants. But like, will those people pay enough to be able to get the access to land? And will there be slurry there for those plants as well is probably another question for Aidan. But I suppose those plants are probably a while off as well. You know, there's none. I know there are some around the country, but in terms of Eamon Ryan's talk, none of those plants are built yet or won't be built for some time yet.
No. So, Aidan, I'll come to you in a minute. But I mean, Amy, the plan is that there will, I think the minister, is it 20 in the next couple of years, the next two or three years, and then 200 in the next kind of 5 years. Like, so it's a significant development if it happens, and it will put more pressure on land and feedstock, etc., and that kind of thing. Can you? I know people that can't see this happening in terms of they don't think anaerobic digestion plants will get up and running in the Republic to any great extent.
Yeah, and I suppose a lot of this will come down to planning as well, because a lot of these will need plan permission depending on the size of them. And Stephen Robb, our renewables editor, would have covered this off in great detail. And only this week there's €3 million announced, I think, for AD development essentially around the country. But planning's going to hold up a lot of these, and Stephen would have said that these the targets are dream stuff, like pie in the sky, like that it's going to be really difficult to get them up and running between planning and, I suppose,
in the time scale. Excellent. I mean, Aidan, just maybe a quick comment. I mean, to make these AD plans work better, they need a mix, the forages and the slurry, like, you know what I mean? Do you think farmers will direct slurry towards the AD plans?
I'd say a share will, Jack, but I don't think it's going to be large scale, and it only pays to draw slurry a very small distance to these AD plants. I mean, and then the feedstock coming back. I have questions over the organic matter status of the feed, of the digested that comes back. Is it the same level? Is it the same level of organic matter, and therefore the carbon that's going back into the soil like the slurry has? You know, because you have to get energy from something. So I have a few issues around that. But for me, I hover between AD plants being a great thing for rural Ireland and being an awful thing for rural Ireland, because I can see it having a huge extra demand on land that we didn't have currently. I know people say that, you know, dairying is driving the demand for land now, and that's going to be competition for dairying. And well and good if it creates viable alternative incomes for farmers. But the way it's structured at the moment, or the way it's going to be structured, is going to have large international players coming into the market, setting up AD plants, and farmers are going to supply the feedstuffs to them, you know, and get as much of a margin out of that as possible, as opposed to us having full ownership of the output that these are generating, and then making a benefit the whole way through.
And
like
getting the profit right through the stream. Forth. Okay, yeah. I hear you. Nice one. Adam, there's a couple of more questions there. We'll finish up now very soon. So one up there in the back top right-hand corner, Adam, and...
David Curry from County Meath.
Man, Dave.
So we've seen the rise in sex semen sales doubling in the last year, and with the Via Genetics opening a new lab, how are we going to convince dairy farmers to focus on the CBV, the commercial beef value of the calf, instead of getting short gestation? The big, large scale dairy farmers want to get their cows as soon as possible. How are we going to focus on that? And also, in the coming years, do you see that market becoming diluted and the price of straws decreasing?
Okay, excellent. Great question, Davey. Like, and very, very on time. Like, yeah.
On my way down, I'll say it's a national DNA program. To get CBV to work, we need to be registering calves. By a DNA registration, because without that, CBV will never work. So CBV is the way to go, because it's taking the genetics, obviously, of the cow and the genetics of the bull. DBI is just on the sire. So it's CBV is the way to go, but it's a national DNA registration program before we do that.
So, Aidan, convincing the dairy farmers to use sex semen, number one, and then maybe those beef animals with a better CBV, will it happen?
It will if the market is going to pay for it, or at least incentivize it. So if the beef farmer buyer sees the CBV and recognizes it and you know, is up to date on it and will pay a little bit more for those higher CBV calves, then the dairy farmers will chase that. Because if it's the only alternative for them to make a sale of a calf, they'll have to chase it, you know. I don't know about the genotype, and I can sell a heifer calf in the mart and say what the EBI of that heifer calf is without any genotyping. Yeah. Why do we need a genotyping just to sell the CBV? I mean, I know Adam's point that there's, you know, incorrect registration and all the rest, and maybe we need more regulation rather than going down the massive cost of genotyping. You know, more oversight of that to make sure farmers are registering calves correctly. Maybe there's other things we can do. Look, and it's a substantial cost for the industry if we have to go genotyping them all. For little benefit, I'm told, in terms of the national genetics.
Yeah, Kira, if sex semen was being used out on Drumagoon in the US?
Yeah.
All sex semen, pretty much?
All sex semen, and then 85% was going to beef then. So, they had it down to a fine art.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, is there one final question in the audience? I thought I saw a hand going up there at one stage. Yeah. That gentleman in the middle.
I'm Sean Inright from Kerry, I suppose. Sean. Just there, you were talking about the race for land, dairy is taking up all the land and buying it up, squeezing tillage, like. But I suppose, dairy farmers especially are being forced to need more land to keep the same amount of cows. But even though we're producing agricultural products like very carbon efficient compared to other countries. Like the demand is going to stay the same for if our agricultural production is going down, the demand is going to stay the same. So like, what has been done to combat that in, we'll say, the EU? Like, because if we have less production, it has to come from somewhere that's going to be less carbon efficient. So, how are we combating that, and what are we doing to stop that? Like,
good man, Sean. So, good question. And again, I suppose looking at a kind of at an EU level rather than a local level. Like, so carbon leakage is the question, I suppose. And the question that Sean is saying is that, you know, if we don't produce in here in Ireland, it's going to be produced in somewhere else. Niamh, it might be produced in New Zealand in the North Island. Aidan, who wants to take a quick, and in terms of, I suppose Sean's direct question is like, in terms of, you know, what can the EU do to stop that? Like, you know,
I was over in Brussels in October, and we put this to the Commission, to the DG Agri, that like we're going to have a lack of food in the world, and they are not concerned. The feeling we got back from them is that they're not concerned once Europe has enough food, which for me is a very flawed argument, because it means there's going to be a scarcity of food elsewhere into the markets that European farmers are supplying. So I don't think they've grappled it. I don't think the policymakers actually understand carbon leakage. I don't think they understand the global food dynamics in terms of trade and where food comes from. And I think they're going to get a rude awakening, as Darren mentioned earlier on, in the fact that when food becomes scarcer and more expensive, and poor people unfortunately won't be able to afford it, particularly in North Africa and Western Africa. So we're heading to strange times, I would say, in terms of global food
supply. Darren, you mentioned it earlier. You think in terms of policy that actually we might be changing, or it might be changing already, in terms of, we've got a lot of it in terms of the CAP Roadshow, that farmers have seen food security being an issue and the policies are keeping food down. But you feel that there's a kind of a bit of a change happening, like we'll say, in the corridors of power. Yeah,
Elise is back on the agenda. So it's a slow juggernaut. So Fran Moran, who was over direct payments, would have said, say, on the CAP Roadshow, that the decisions that the department are currently bringing in have been decided 3, 4, 5 years ago. And he said the discussions around the next CAP will now talk. And he said very much Russia's invasion of Ukraine has it in people's mindset that they need to have food security. Europe is in a very privileged position in that we have a surplus of beef, we have a surplus of lamb, we have surplus of dairy products, or we have the potential across all of those to, say, scale up or to sort ourselves out. We've been grappling for years around tillage and soya, and that's something Siobhan can talk about in a minute. But I think I would fear that the situation that's there with soya, on that, on one hand, it's been looked about as a bad thing of importing it, but then when it suits us or when it suits Europe, it's been seen as being a good thing. And I think that it'll be hard to get a policy that'll bring in something exact. And I think, as Aidan said, I would be a bit fearful, but I do think that the way that they combat it is try and promote production in Europe, but I can't see them stopping, say, produce, because we've now gone so far that we're talking about global trade in all commodities. Yeah. And the only thing as farmers we can push for is equivalent standards of production. And I'll finish this one. The one worry I would have is what happens across the water in this, particularly on the sheep side of things, in this, will the UK become a backdoor for imports into Europe? And I think that'll definitely happen on the likes of sheep meat. Whether or not it'll happen on beef, it'll depend on whether the UK goes and does deals with New Zealand, Australia, Brazil,
America, yeah.
but maybe Siobhan wants to comment on the chili side.
Just touch off the soya, Siobhan, and what protein crops that Irish farmers can grow to replace that. Like, if, you know, or will, do you see it happening?
Well, we can't directly replace it. You know, the protein crops that we grow here aren't as high in protein. So, I think we will certainly still need more soya, but we have to be more responsible about where it comes from. Maybe, you know, do we import it from places where there isn't deforestation? And that kind of thing. There's loads of double standards in the EU as well. You know, what's on that soya that's coming in, that's imported? Like, we have tight restrictions on chemicals here. So there's other things in that debate as well. But as farmers and as students here in UCD, and I think I said this last year as well, you know, the carbon leakage thing is also about education. And the people who are you know, implementing policy or who are talking about it, you know, the city people who don't understand agriculture, they need to learn how to understand, and we need to show them. We need to, whether when you go out tonight, if you're talking to the teachers or the nurses or the engineers, you know, and you're having a chat about agriculture and they say, oh God, agriculture is terrible. You know, you have to explain why it's not terrible. Or if you meet your neighbour and you're spreading slurry, you have to explain, well, I'm actually using a low emission slurry spreading equipment here, and it's really good for the environment, and I'm being more efficient. And I don't think we can underestimate that. You know, people will never understand carbon leakage if we don't do a better job of telling our story, you know, in agriculture.
And the unique product that we produce in Ireland, whether it's grain, beef, lamb, or you know, whatever Irish products. And it's not, we just talk about the main sectors here. There's horticulture and other sectors as well that we're producing lots of excellent product. Folks, I think we'll leave it at that for tonight. Thanks for your participation. Thanks for your questions. Thanks again, of course, to our panel, Adam, Darren, Aidan and Siobhan. Thanks to the panel that's here beside me, Robert, Niamh, Amy and Kira. Remember, you can listen back to any of the podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us to make this show happen on a weekly basis. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.